Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Students and parents connected with the South Florida school shooting had been hoping a rare Florida Senate meeting over the weekend would go their way, or at least give the nod to some of their concerns.
What we've tried to explain to parents is that this is a process, and so we've brought them into the process.
Also tonight, the Florida Senate continues its debate on school safety, including the controversy over whether teachers should be allowed to pack heat in the classroom.
Because when you send your kids to school, you're not there. The teachers are the parents. So why are we doing this?
We'll also get the latest on a move to further crack down on human trafficking in Florida and discover that zombie-like gambling legislation can suddenly rise from the grave. We're in the final week of the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. The entire Florida Senate held a rare weekend meeting to hash out various responses to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. To say that what came out of that meeting was definite would be a vast overstatement. Indeed, senators were back at work today trying to lock down various details of their school safety proposal. Even as this edition of Capitol Report was being readied for air, the situation was extremely fluid. And that's pretty much the way the situation has been all along. We flash back to last week when survivors of the school shooting and their families came to Tallahassee for a lobby day. They began with high hopes they might be able to wield some influence over gun safety legislation, but instead, as we hear from Jessica Bakeman from member station WLRN, they found the process confusing and at times upsetting during their 12 hours at the Capitol.
Elise Claprood and her daughter Annabelle arrive at the Florida Capitol with a schedule, a map, and a mission. Annabelle's a sophomore at Stoneman Douglas. She goes by Annie, and she and her mom want state lawmakers to know she has a right to be safe at school.
Members, the Appropriations Committee will come to order. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Their first stop is the House Appropriations Committee, 9 a.m. They sit on the aisle so Elise can duck out later for a meeting with the governor.
I think on behalf of the entire committee, our heartfelt condolences.
That's Chair Carlos Trujillo. He's a Republican from Miami.
None of us can really imagine the amount of pain that you're going through.
The committee is taking up a comprehensive gun safety bill that's working its way through the legislature. It adds a 3-day waiting period before someone can buy a gun, and it raises the minimum age for buying a gun from 18 to 21. The Parkland families like that. They don't like the part of the bill that would allow some teachers to carry guns, but they're willing to accept it in order to get the rest, especially because they don't think it'll ever happen in Broward County. The bill gives both the sheriff and the school board the power to block it.
Members, we have multiple amendments on this bill.
The committee has to debate 17 amendments, and it takes hours. Some of the Parkland parents have to leave, so the committee lets them speak out of turn. Andrew Pollock's daughter, Meadow, was killed in the shooting.
We send our children to school where someone could just walk in with a gun and kill our kids. I can't tell you how much pain is running through my body.
And Alex Schachter's dad, Max, whose own father stands next to him, rubbing his back while he speaks.
If we would have had these measures in place, I would not have to have buried my son next to his mother a week and a half ago.
We do have 20 minutes for all debate.
Later, the committee finally takes up the full bill. Elise Claprood and her daughter Annie, a Stoneman Douglas sophomore, get in line to speak.
12 days ago, 18 hours and 56 minutes ago, I was on the floor scared for my life because someone walked into my school with an automatic weapon. I was in the first classroom that the shooter approached. I saw everything. I thank you for putting this bill together so fast to help keep me, my friends, and my teachers safe. I have a right to life, and so do all of the children. Someone my age shouldn't have seen what I've seen. I shouldn't have had to step over my friends to leave the building.
I'm Elise Clappard. I'm the mother of that brave child, Annabelle, that just spoke to you. So I'm here today as a mommy.
And then Elise's main message.
The adults failed the children. We have an opportunity to not fail them again.
The bill's sponsor is Representative Jose Oliva, a Republican from Miami Lakes. He's set to be the House Speaker next year. Oliva proposes an amendment that takes the Parkland parents by surprise. It would require sheriffs to develop training programs for teachers who want to carry guns. When the parents first hear this, they're confused and then angry. They say Oliva himself assured them during dinner just the night before that the bill would more or less stay the same. The amendment passes, and the parents talk amongst themselves. What just happened? It sinks in a little later.
They literally left that room and changed everything in the middle of the night.
Elise Clappard says between meetings with legislators.
So we feel distrust, confused, and terrified. We're entrusting the system to save our children, and they're playing games.
Later, I ask Oliva about the amendment, and he says it wasn't as big of a deal as everyone was making it out to be. It would still be up to school boards whether teachers would be allowed to carry guns. But since sheriffs would be compelled to participate, they would need to have the training programs ready for interested teachers if at any point their local school boards decide to opt in.
What we've tried to explain to parents is that this is a process, and so we've brought them into the process.
After the committee meeting, Elise and her daughter Annie pick up boxed lunches in the Capitol cafeteria, sandwiches, chips, and cookies. Elise tells Annie she has food in her hair and then pulls the morsel out. They laugh.
There's seats back there. Do you want to sit back here?
There's one back there. Yep.
Next, there's a meeting with Senator Gary Farmer. He's a Democrat from Fort Lauderdale who has worked with Parkland students and their parents on advocating for gun control since the shooting. The senator has political advice for the parents. Don't waste the leverage you have right now by supporting a bill that's not perfect. Hold out for something better.
I refuse to believe that it's not possible. Things are different now because of what happened last week. This has hit people so close to home.
Farmer reads a handwritten letter out loud to them. It's from a woman who says her friend's grandson survived the shooting. The account is disturbing, and many in the room are crying by the end, including the senator.
I'm in this fight with you guys. We're not going to let nothing pass. But don't commit to a product. Get more. Because this won't stop.
A Parkland parent whose daughter is almost in middle school starts to see their dinner with lawmakers the night before a little differently. This is Robin Lindenberg.
I'm almost feeling a little used from last night when they said, hey, you guys, get out there, give us your tears, give us your support.
The parents, feeling more and more upset, huddle in the hallway after the meeting. They're not sure if they should be more aggressive. They resent that they have to be making these calculations when, as they see it, their children's lives are at risk. When it's time for dinner, they walk to a park near the Capitol where the Parkland families will be having a catered meal. It's been a long day, and Elise says she just hopes it'll mean some wins for Parkland.
But the process is definitely grueling and difficult to navigate when you're a visitor.
After dinner, a candlelight vigil on the steps of the Capitol. Florida A&M University's choir is singing. Elise hugs another parent tightly. Someone hands out candles. It's windy and they're struggling to keep them lit. The organizer asks Annie to help with reading the names of the victims.
Peter Wang.
After the vigil, the parents wait for the bus to take them back to their hotel. The next day, they'll go home. Elise came to Tallahassee to bring the message. The adults failed the children, and they need to do something to fix it. She leaves feeling like they'll definitely do something, but she doesn't know what. I'm Jessica Bakeman in Tallahassee.
So So where are we now in the process? For that, we check in with Sasha Cordner, who's been following this afternoon's Senate debate.
Both the House and Senate plans include some sort of ban on bump stocks, raises the minimum age to buy any gun from 18 to 21, and could allow law enforcement to seize weapons from those deemed mentally ill and likely pose a threat. Before the Senate vote Monday, it included a controversial provision allowing designated teachers to carry firearms on school grounds if they are deputized and complete law enforcement training. State Senator Daphne Campbell was against the arming teachers provision.
I remember when my daughter was growing up, she always said to me, "Mommy, I want to be a teacher." And I said, no, I discouraged her not to be a teacher because I said, "Teacher, don't get good pay. And you're not going to stay with me all your life." So if teachers is underpaid already, now you want them to be a police officer, a security guard, you want to arm them. You want them to be a parent, because when you send your kids to school, you're not there. The teachers are the parents. So why are we doing this?
But Republican Senator Kelly Stargell says there's a lot of misconceptions with this bill.
I think that's what's confusing some people, that they think that we're just saying we're going to let any teacher with a concealed weapon permit have a gun. That is not what this program is. This program is someone who wants to volunteer their time, who may be a teacher, may be a school administrator, may be a retired law enforcement officer who is now teaching, who wants to go through the extra training, 130 hours, go through the background check, go through all of those steps because they care about the kids and they want to have that extra opportunity. If an active shooter comes into that school, they can take them out. I would argue that these are people who already know these kids.
Democrats also try to tack on amendments for an assault weapons ban, a ban on high-capacity magazines, requiring Floridians to register their firearms, requiring local authorities to be alerted when someone who failed a background check tried to purchase a gun, and allowing parents to opt out of classes where a person other than a school resource officer is armed. One amendment did pass and then was later brought back up again and rejected. It included a 2-year moratorium on the sale of AR-15s. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a massive education bill strongly opposed by many public school educators now seems to be zooming ahead on greased rails in the legislature.
That language has gone through, and that is a priority of House Speaker Richard Corcoran. And in fact, most of this bill, House Bill 7055, is a priority of Corcoran.
Florida lawmakers find there's no easy fix for the increasing incidence of human trafficking in the state.
There are a lot of forces that have been working against that effort and continue to do so.
And lawmakers are again talking gambling, but some question whether there's time to make a deal.
And I'm pretty sure the chances of a gaming bill passing this session are none.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
We are joined on Capitol Report during this final week of the 2018 Florida lawmaking session by Lynn Hatter. She has been following a bill that we teed up back on Friday. If you were listening to Capitol Report then, when we had Joanne McCall, the president of the Florida Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, in to talk about a bill that she did not like too very much that was being teed up in the legislature. You were following that bill today, Lynn. What was the latest on that?
Well, the Senate passed it, and it's now going back to the House where it originated for that chamber to pass it. This has been part of one of the pieces needed to form sort of the state's budget deal for the upcoming fiscal year. Part of the reason why the Senate had so much heartburn about it was that a majority of senators really didn't like the teachers union language that was included, which FEA President Joanne McCall was discussing. This is the language that would have required the union to get 50% of basically teachers in an entire school district to become paying members. And the union has said, you know, that's impossible. Even if you look at, you know, people who vote in primaries, you know, if we get to 30%, we're doing good. So how are you going to get to 50% of anything? But that language has gone through, and that is a priority of House Speaker Richard Corcoran. And in fact, most of this bill, House Bill 7055, is a priority of Corcoran because that measure also contains his bullying language.
Now, explain that, if you would, for those folks who did not catch Ms. McCall's explanation on Friday. What does that do?
Sure. So the bullying language in the bill would basically allow students who are victims of bullying to transfer to other public schools or receive a corporate tax scholarship to transfer and go to a private school. Obviously, the issue there is the corporate tax scholarship program, because this measure would allow that program to grow even larger by tapping into sales tax revenues. Now, right now, the corporate tax scholarship program is funded by a tax credit on revenues. This would allow it to tap directly into sales taxes. So that's also something that has given a lot of people heartburn. And for some lawmakers, it's a poison pill. I said that this passed 2014 in the Senate, which means you also had Republicans who broke sort of with the majority and went over with Democrats to vote against it, but not enough of them, hence the bill going through. It also has provisions that even a lot of lawmakers say are very good, things like revamping Title I funding, the way that schools can spend the federal dollars that come in and help low-income students. That's what Title I is. There's also language on there that kind of revamps school building standards for public schools. There is support for it among there. But obviously, the bullying language and the union language are sort of the biggest issue of this bill.
But having passed the Senate and then moving on to the House and being, as you mentioned, a major priority for the Speaker of the Florida House, this would seem like a done deal.
It is likely a done deal, especially because it's going back to the House. Now, meanwhile, we should add that the House has been holding one of the Senate's top priorities, you know, waiting on that bill to get back. And that's Senate Bill 4. That one has been postponed. It has basically been sitting in the House waiting to see what the Senate was going to do with their bill. So House Bill 4, which is Senate President Joe Negron's higher education proposal, would basically revamp the way community colleges can offer baccalaureate degrees. And it also contains language that Negron is hoping would make the state's public universities more competitive. So those are the two bills that are sort of going back and forth. And those are the two education bills that have sort of formed, you know, the trade-off in the path toward ironing out a budget for the upcoming fiscal year.
And we will hasten to add that the time for that budget to be finalized and put on members' desks, although it's really just available online, it's not really on desks like a big whomping document, is coming up on Tuesday.
Yes. In order to meet the 72-hour cooling off period, mandatory cooling off period, lawmakers have to have a budget on people's desks by tomorrow at some time in order for lawmakers to be able to vote on it and get out of here by Friday.
Meanwhile, the final week of session, anything can and usually does happen. We'll try to keep you in the loop as quickly as we can as these developments come down. And you have been a great help in that regard, Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter. Thanks, Lynn.
Bills are dying.
Momentum has stalled for a bill that would have allowed human trafficking victims to sue hotels that do not take action and train their employees to prevent such atrocities. As Ryan Daly tells us, the measure's sponsor isn't saying why she pulled the bill.
Victim advocates are raising their eyebrows after Democratic Senator Lauren Book tabled her sex trafficking bill. The measure was touted as a step forward in holding hotels and motels accountable, enabling victims to sue businesses that overlook or facilitate the crimes. The bill had only one more committee stop, but Book postponed a hearing out of concern that the House's version did not look promising.
There are a lot of forces that have been working against that effort and continue to do so. And so I am going to continue to try to do all that I can to unstick it from where it is and move it forward.
That's baffling for the advocates and trafficking survivors who'd worked with Book and Dover Republican Representative Ross Spano, the bill's House sponsor.
And we're hopeful as well for Senator Lauren Book, having a abuse past of her own, you know, that she was also, you know, going to make this happen.
Tomas Layers heads Florida Abolitionist. It's an Orlando-based group that works to rescue trafficking survivors and help them recover. He said advocates for the measure had considered Spano their champion for some time.
And I think that was the disappointment, was when the survivors had met with her last Monday and they were promised that she would do everything in her power to see this go through.
Spano told the Tampa Bay Times he didn't know where Book had heard the House version would fail in the chamber. It passed its final House committee stop Thursday. Meanwhile, Book says she has been frustrated at the pushback she's gotten while trying to advance the measure.
You know, if my record and the things that I've done in the space of protecting victims of sexual abuse and assault wasn't so long and so personal to me, it is laughable. And so some of the ire that I've received from some individuals is misplaced.
Now, the proposal's supporters, both in-state and out, are calling and emailing the offices of Book and Senator Lisbeth Beniquisto, chair of the Senate Rules Committee. The hope? To get SB 1044 heard on the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
A flurry of bill action at the Capitol today. As time grows short in the session, Bob Brooks with our sister operation, the Florida Channel, has that.
After a full weekend at the Capitol, the final week of session began with Senate and House both convening this morning. Bills are starting to move between houses with a little more frequency since many of them have had similar tracks through their respective committees. For instance, in an effort to combat the more than 500,000 complaints about unsolicited phone calls, Senator Grimsley's Florida Call Blocking Act, Senate Bill 962, was read a second time and then laid on the table in favor of committee substitute for House Bill 1267, which is identical. Other bills which were rolled to a third reading included Senate Bill 858. The Sunshine Protection Act provides legislative intent for observing daylight saving time year-round. It, too, was laid on the table in favor of House Bill 1013. Even if the bill is passed and signed, though, Congress will have to address the issue in Washington. Senate Bill 1156 was tabled in favor of committee substitute for House Bill 591, which prevents the repeal of support for Florida Missing Children's Day, and it expands a project for missing persons with special needs to all centers for autism-related disabilities. Senate Bill 648, Employment Services for Persons with Disabilities. This bill specifies that participants in certain disabled persons' work experiences are considered state employees for workers' comp purposes. The bill was tabled and referred to identical House Bill 1437 and immediately placed on third reading. Across the rotunda in the House chambers, House Bill 1165. This bill revises trauma service areas and provisions relating to the number and location of trauma centers. It passed the House and heads to the Senate. And House Bill 521. This bill prohibits local governments from requiring a permit or interfering with certain governmental entities from trimming or removing vegetation where that entity has a duty to maintain any right-of-way. House Bill 521 passed the House and now heads to the Senate. Tomorrow the Senate convenes at 10, the House at 10:30. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a week ago, leaders in the House and Senate said a gambling overhaul this session was unlikely since the budget and school and gun safety measures would take priority. But Regan McCarthy reports the House passed its chamber's version of a gambling bill today.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran says he'd be happy for part of his legacy to be putting the issue of gambling to bed.
Every single year, it feels like there's a battle of some sort of expansion of gaming. And as a conservative, something I don't necessarily support at all. I would love to be able to have it be a legacy that for the people that come after me, they don't have to sit here and fight and defend Florida.
But following the school shooting in Parkland, legislative leaders said their priorities had changed, and many issues, including gambling, would likely end up on the back burner. Rob Bradley is the Senate Appropriations Chair.
You know, between the budget and dealing with the issues and the failures of government that have come to our attention with the Parkland situation, that has certainly got our attention. Really, to above and beyond any other things we're dealing with right now.
But this week, Corcoran's chamber passed its version of a gambling overhaul bill.
The question now recurs on final passage of House Bill 7067. The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
70 yeas, 40 nays, Madam Speaker.
Show the bill passes.
The House bill would largely keep the status quo. It extends the state's gambling agreement with the Seminole Indian Tribe for 20 years, a point that raises concerns for Aventura Democratic Representative Joe Geller.
It will substantially govern what future legislatures are able to do. They won't be able to even adopt a new law without changing the compact and ending up putting us in violation of the compact. So there are a lot of problems with this bill.
House members also spent a significant amount of time debating pre-reveal games such as Gator Coin, which allow players to see the outcome before playing. The House bill would define the games as slot machines, but others argue gambling requires an element of chance. It's a discussion Boynton Beach Democratic Representative Joseph Abruzzo said was fruitless.
I think I have a game that I know the outcome of, and I'm pretty sure that the chances of a gaming bill passing this session are none. So if we can reserve the debate and questions, let's just vote this stuff in and out, and let's go home.
Significant differences remain between the House and Senate gambling plans. While Corcoran says any measure that passes in his chamber must be a contraction in gambling, Senate President Joe Negron says adding new slot machines at a number of paramutuals is a must for him.
I think that we owe it to the hundreds of thousands of fellow citizens who live in the eight counties that approve referendums, including St. Lucie County, which I represent. It's the largest county in my district, and they had a referendum and they decided they wanted to have additional slots as part of the gaming landscape in their community, and I think that needs to be given great weight.
But that move isn't likely to get much traction in the House, since it's something many would call an expansion. While it's unclear whether the two sides will be able to come together in the few remaining days of the legislative session, incoming Senate President Bill Galvano told reporters last week the Senate will, in his words, stay on it. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Ryan Daly. We also thank our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.